Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow. Thanks so much for spending part of your Thursday with us. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. One of two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. We'll have a special guest, Justin Tuck, two-time Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants, will be joining us a little bit later on in the program. You can also send in your questions using hashtag AskTuck if you want us to ask him your specific question. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. There's also a number of news items, Paul,
yes,
that we want to get to right here off the top. The Giants have just announced that they have added a new member to the front office as they have hired former Lions general manager Martin Mayhew. He was the team's GM with the Lions from late 2008 until this past November. He spent 15 seasons in the Lions front office, and his title with the Giants is going to be Director of Football Operations / Special Projects, and he will replace Matt Harris, who recently coincidentally joined the Lions organization as their Vice President of Football Administration. He's also a former player himself, Paul.
Yeah, I remember him with the Buccaneers and the Redskins. In fact, he was one of those smaller-style corners who was a pretty good thief in his day, I might add. I don't know if he's stealing anything here since he's been at the facility, but he was pretty good at getting his hands on the ball. One of those smaller guys. He took a lot of risks for the ball. Pretty good tackler. Pretty good player, actually. I would have to say, you'd have to look up in his bio. I think he played almost 10 years in the league.
Played 9 years in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean,
right around there.
Quality player. Looking forward to whatever experience that he can add to the entire situation.
He was selected by the Bills in the 1988 draft. In addition to Buffalo, he played for the Redskins, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well, and he was a starter on the Redskins Super Bowl championship team in Super Bowl 26.
Remember it very well. And, you know, the thing about what the Giants have done here by adding another NFL veteran, a guy who has been through the wars, again, as a player and as a front office guy, see, to me, I always think the more well-rounded, experienced guys you can add to the mix, the better off you are. I don't necessarily think it's just great when you bring somebody in who maybe he's done one thing for a long time. That's good. But if he's had the whole world of experiences in the game, that means he gets all the facets of it from every angle. And that means anytime he's sitting in his office, whatever question it is that they have to ask him, he can go to his frame of reference and say, okay, I understand why this answer needs to be this way, because he understands all the different angles from all the different perspectives. I like having guys in the mix who have a wealth and a variety of experience.
A diverse background, essentially.
Without question.
Because, like you said, he's got a taste of what it takes to be a productive football player on the field and then what it takes to put a team together. And he did help the Lions get to the postseason twice, and he helped turn around that franchise because, as we know, you know, the Lions, once they parted ways with Barry Sanders and he retired, you know, it took a number of years till they got back to the postseason. So, clearly, he has experience in that department. The other news item is more with respect to the roster, the team makeup. And yesterday when we spoke, it wasn't official. It is now official. We have multiple announcements, multiple transactions in which the Giants parted ways with Jeff Schwartz and Will Beatty in terms of the offensive line, and then John Beeson announced his retirement. So he is hanging up the jersey. The two offensive linemen were cut. And now the questions arise in terms of what the Giants are going to do on the right side of the offensive line, Paul, because you have some youth, you have some veterans, John Jerry, you have Newhouse, and you also have Bobby Hart, who had some starting experience.
Bobby Hart, to me, is certainly going to get an opportunity to win a starting job in training camp, probably for me at right guard. But again, he's got some versatility there, has taken snaps at both spots on the right side. And so the Giants are in a position where, in my mind, they need two starting offensive linemen. At least one guy who will start and another guy who's going to compete with Hart. He's got to be a starting caliber lineman because it may wind up being that maybe Hart competes and loses out. So maybe they have two brand new starters on the side of that line. The bottom line is they've got to fortify that spot. That's quite obvious. And in addition to that, somehow they have to find a way to fortify their front seven on defense as well. So they got plenty of work to do, but they got a lot of resources to do it. We now officially know the specifics of the parting of ways of the three guys yesterday. As you mentioned, a retirement for Beeson and a release for the other two guys. And, of course, salary cap ramifications are that the Giants do have a plethora of dollars to throw around if they so choose.
On top of what they already had, which Jerry Reese, the general manager, indicated when he addressed the media after the season, he basically said that they are in a good financial spot entering free agency, where they can be a little bit perhaps more aggressive than they've been in previous years because of the financial flexibility.
No question. And I think, quite honestly, when you look at the free agent pool, again, it's fluid, but when you look at it right now, you'll see a few guys who are in the upper tier of the crop. But I do think this free agent pool this year, based on what we know so far, has a lot of second-tier guys at a lot of different positions. And I think that could bode well because, you know, when you talk about the Giants' history, they usually haven't made a lot of big splashes in free agency. Maybe they'll go for one or two guys who are on that elite level, but they usually try to sign a lot more second-tier guys. That seems to be the way they've operated the last decade.
Well, and from a depth perspective, Paul, as you just touched
on,
they
need bodies.
It's important because the more guys that are in there, the more competition, and then you're going to obviously get to the point where you find the two best players that you can slot in at right guard, at right tackle. Bobby Hart, Newhouse, and Jerry, as we mentioned, those are your internal candidates. That doesn't mean that the Giants are not going to look to external options, whether it be
absolutely
through free agency and the draft.
And so I think what you're looking at with the amount of resources the Giants will have available, with the amount of second-tier free agents available, they could either do one of two things as they add to those resources over the last couple of days and now even further as they go forward. They can either maybe go for one or two bigger fish than what they originally planned to do, or they could just accumulate more second-tier quality, which is also going to do the roster a lot of good.
Well, if you look at Will Beatty and Jeff Schwartz, I mean, just to put things in perspective, you know, injuries was at least something common between both of the players. Jeff Schwartz played 11 games last season.
Well,
he was limited to just two the previous year.
Beeson
as well. I mean, all three of them. But that, I guess, gets to the point that the more bodies you have, you protect yourself from that injury bug, so that this way, if one player falls off, you at least have other options that are reliable enough to insert them in. They have enough experience where the productivity doesn't fall off.
Yeah, no doubt. So we're looking forward to a very productive offseason, but right now we got to move along with what we have to do, and Justin Tuck will be coming on in just a bit. We're talking about these transactions. One thing I did want to add, we talked yesterday about the free agency period. And again, folks, I want to make something very clear to you, because last year was the first year of the talking days, and that's, for lack of a better term, there are three talking days between the time that you can talk to free agents and the time that you can sign them. I want to make that clear because the league decided last year that there were too many backdoor conversations, too many under-the-table conversations with a lot of free agents. And then all of a sudden, boom, guys were being signed and you knew something was a little fishy there. They must have been jumping the deadline by a little bit. So the league has been very, very stout and hard about creating these three talking days before free agency. So anything you hear about guys in terms of free agents and where they might go or who they might be interested in, let me make it very clear. That's all premature. There are talking days for the league to allow that kind of conversation, and it's still over a month away.
Well, the NBA has something similar.
Away.
And the NBA's period is actually even longer. It's almost,
it is,
you know, a few extra days where agents, teams, players can at least exchange ideas and negotiations before anything can officially be signed. So that's essentially what Paul was talking about, whereas that's that grace period, as I like to call it. You can pick up the phone, you can chat, you can talk, but nothing officially can be announced, finalized, and so forth until 3 days after.
March 6th is the talking day. March 9th is the signing day. So that's when it's going to get absolutely bonkers and crazy, and doing this show is going to be insane during those 3 days.
Well, that's why you hear jokingly about when a player visits a facility that the team tries not to allow that player to leave the facility until they can at least get something in blood or something to that degree, because with the grace period, you walk out the door, you can't prevent another team from calling the agent and so forth.
Well, and of course, you can't sign them during that grace period, but what you can get is a firm handshake.
Yes, well, firm handshake, or at least some type of a verbal agreement of some
sort. Well, in my culture, a handshake is good enough. You understand?
Yes.
Okay.
The acting debut of Paul Dottino here on Big Blue Kickoff
you
Live.
Take it easy, young man.
We want to remind fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination at DraftKings. You can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. So Justin Tuck will be joining us in a little bit. He'll be reminiscing on his career here with the Giants. He'll also reflect on his decision to retire. We've had a few notable Giants that have retired in recent recent days as well as recent years. OCU Manure, if you recall, retired before the start of last season, and John Beeson just retired a day ago. Beeson played briefly with Justin Tuck in 2013. The two of them crossed paths.
They did.
When Beeson came in and became a leader in the locker room, and we know the history between Tuck and OC, but it's interesting how, you know, we always reminisce, Paul, on this show about the defensive line, and you think about that given what the Broncos did against the Carolina Panthers, how important the pass rush is, and really you got half of NASCAR is now hanging up the jersey between OC and Justin Tuck.
Well, and also Michael Strahan.
Correct.
He's familiar. Who was part of the first NASCAR package. You know, the thing
the car
that
has been fine-tuned and tweaked.
Yes. I do just want to mention, though, Beeson, before we get on to Justin, who will be coming on in just a couple of minutes, and there'll be plenty of talk about him and his fellow defensive linemen in those moments. Beeson, from the moment he got here, he showed that he was going to be a pro's pro. And, you know, I'll never forget the week he was traded from Carolina to the Giants. Giants go out to a nationally televised game, primetime game in Chicago. And Beeson, after just being here for about 3 days, goes out and records double-digit in tackles, playing the middle linebacker spot. He was all over the field. He was really the best defensive player on the field that night. It was the night also that Brandon Jacobs ran for 100 yards and was just a beast. I think he might have scored 2 touchdowns as well in that game, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, the Giants fell short. Brandon Marshall had an offensive interference catch for a touchdown in the end zone, which never should have been allowed, but we don't want to talk about that. And then, of course, there was Brandon Myers not going for a ball at the end of the game when Eli was trying to bring the Giants back in the final couple of moments. It was quite a memorable game for me, but for the reasons of Beeson and for Jacobs in particular, even though the Giants lost, it was a really good night.
Well, I agree with you, Paul, and John and I shot a two-minute drill yesterday talking about John Beeson's career, and that Bears game is really what jumps out to me. I mean, hours. You mentioned days. It felt like it was hours after he arrived, and if you remember, I believe early in the game, Paul, the Bears got the ball in the red zone off a turnover, and Beeson made a key stop on third down to prevent them in the red zone. He had 12 tackles, 11 solo, extremely active. It seemed as if he had been here for years with the way he performed in that game
against right
Chicago.
He fit right in. It was almost like Antonio Pierce had morphed onto the field again.
Pretty much. It was unfortunate that after that season in 2013, he wound up suiting up for every game. All 12 games that he was eligible to play, he was in uniform. Then the following 2 years, just 9 games combined, because unfortunately the injury bug just got the better of him, and it came in a variety of different forms.
And it's a shame, but as we've now learned, apparently a lot of medical folks have said to him it's probably best that he hangs it up. The knee is just really not very good. And I know from talking to John in recent times, he was still hoping there was a chance he could rehab it because the competitor in him still wanted to come out there and play. But I think it's quite apparent after discussing it with the doctors, the knee's not going to be good enough for him to be able to play at a high level and certainly to be able to get out there on a regular basis. And he's not doing himself any service or justice or a team any service or justice if he can't do either one of those things on a regular basis.
Well, in his statement, part of the Giants' release yesterday, John Beeson issued a statement in which he announced his retirement. And one of the things he mentioned, Paul, and this is related to what you just said, and I'm paraphrasing it, he said that, you know, the one thing when he looks back at his career specifically with the Giants, he feels bad as if he let the fans down by not being on the field enough. So, I mean, you could tell, you know, we always label players in a certain category, but, you know, Beeson, from his interaction with the media, from what he said on the record, it seemed as if the injuries really aided him during the course of his tenure because, you know, this guy had the hunger to quiet a lot of the skeptics. Remember, there were a lot of question marks him coming out of Carolina. Could he remain healthy? Could he play for X amount of games? And it really aided him throughout the course of his tenure here with the Giants because, I mean, he was itching to get back on the field.
I couldn't agree with you more. He's a guy who I really, really wanted to see a lot more of, and it just didn't work out. And I feel as bad for him as I do for the team. I really do. I mean,
because
good guy.
Such a key piece.
Really
in
good
terms
guy.
Of that middle linebacker spot, that leadership that he provided both on the field as well as off the field. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to some of your phone calls a little bit later on, but right now we are joined by a very special guest here on the line on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 2-time Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants during his 9 seasons with Big Blue, and that is Justin Tuck. Justin, Lance Meadow, Paul DiTino here with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Really appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's going great. How are you guys doing?
Great, Justin. It's awesome to talk to you. Congratulations on a great career, and we are just so proud and honored that you wore the Giants uniform and helmet for as long as you did, and truly was such an important part of the Tom Coughlin era. And I think, you know, for us, it's bittersweet any time that one of the guys from that team, you know, steps off the field, whether it's Coach Coughlin, whether it's OC, whether it's you. It's tough for all of us to watch, and I wonder how are you dealing with things right now that you've decided not to play anymore.
I'm doing pretty good, man. You know, for me, man, I think I know that this is the right decision, so I don't have any regrets about it. I'm looking forward to the next chapter, and everybody keeps using the word retirement. I try to use the word transition, so I'm just transitioning into you know, what's next.
Justin, when it comes to ultimately determining whether or not a player wants to retire, sometimes it's because of an injury or some other factors. The fact that you're able to go out on your own terms, in which you've been able to accomplish a lot on the field, but not necessarily feel as if you're leaving something back. I mean, how important was that to be able to leave the game comfortably on your own terms?
I think it's very important. I always wanted to be the guy that, you know, never stayed too long and never kind of cheated the game and just kind of came back for another year just because they were paying me. I mean, if I knew if I couldn't go out there and give 100% mentally, then it was time for me to leave. And that's the case. I know I had an injury this year, but you know, my body feels great. I've had time to rehab that. You know, back in the weight room, back, you know, not training for football, but just training for life, I guess. I still work out every day. And so, yeah, my body, I feel as though it could play a few more years, but mentally, it was time.
Justin, before we get to some of your Giants memories, and I want to do that, I want to ask you about the Tuck Rush for Literacy program, which I know you are still going to be a huge part of, some of the other charitable endeavors you do. I have a feeling you're still going to be around here a lot. I hope you're at the facility as much as possible, because we'd love to see you, quite frankly. And I know that despite being from the Southeast, you are a transplanted New Yorker as much as anybody could be. You love your Yankees, you love the Giants and the Knicks and the Rangers, and you belong here, my friend.
Well, we're gonna stay in the Northeast, and you know, you said I'm a Southeasterner. We bought a summer house down there, so I think I got those two covered. But yeah, I do love this area. It definitely grew on me my 9-10 years here. My wife is from the Northeast. You know, great schools, great people. You know, we love it up here. So yeah, it makes sense for us to be back in this area. And yeah, I'm looking forward to going to see some Knicks and Rangers and Yankees games. You know, this coming season. And yeah, it's just good to be back this way. And yeah, Tuck Rush for Literacy will continue to run. This transitioning period in my life gives me the opportunity to focus on that a little more than I have been because of, you know, the obligations of football. And yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, these next couple of months to really sit down and kind of draw out a plan to, you know, how we're gonna attack, I guess, the next quarter of my life.
Justin just mentioned a lot of the opportunities that the New York market presented for you. And, you know, you made the move from, as Paul just mentioned, down south all of a sudden to the East Coast, a huge market. Aside from what you were able to accomplish on the field here while with the Giants, I mean, what did the New York market do for you in terms of really opening up more within your career as a football player?
Well, I mean, if you think about just, you know, the opportunities off the field in New York City, whether that be meeting great foundations, great companies to partner with in my charity work, you know, being on billboards in the city, Subway, Nike, all those things come into play because you are in this market, and plus we won. So it was a very visible time in my life that obviously I benefited from being in this market. New York City is the number one city as far as that goes in the world. So if you do the things the right way here, it makes your life a whole lot easier. So for me personally, I've had an opportunity to meet and, you know, be in partnership with a lot of great organizations, a lot of great companies. And, yeah, that's part of it.
You know, Justin, I think about the contrast, and great Giants, great Justin Tuck joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I think about two scenes that are personal for me when I think about you and your career here. One was second year here, you got a broken foot, you're on crutches outside the parking lot of the old Giant Stadium, and you and I are standing out there talking, and you're telling me about your foot, and very disappointed, very dejected, that here it is, this burgeoning career is supposed to get off to a phenomenal start, and you're sidelined with this broken foot. And, you know, at first I don't think they really knew exactly how bad it was or if it was going to sideline you for a long period of time, but you had the pins put in. And I remember talking to you out there in the parking lot, and you were still keeping your spirits up, but I knew you were down. And I think about that scene and that conversation in contrast to sacking Tom Brady at the end of the first half of Super Bowl 42. And I think about that. And to me, that's your defining moment. That, and you may have another play, but that's the play that I will always put at the pinnacle of what Justin Tuck was to the Giants, because it was a huge play and a huge moment from a huge guy. And I can't help but look at the contrast of those two events. I don't know how well you remember our conversation in the parking lot, but you must feel awfully good about how far you came from the time you hurt your foot.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I was dejected because I just had I won't say the doctor's name, but I just had a doctor that no longer works with the Giants, probably because of this, but told me that my career was over and that he was going to fuse my foot and do all this stuff. And, you know, and Ronnie Barnes literally looked at me and was like, let's go. But hearing that, you know, I'm in my second year here and you know, really had a great opportunity knowing that, you know, Trey was on the back end of his career. I had a lot of opportunity to learn from him, learn from OC. So, you know, kind of being the next man up. So that was all. I was really looking forward to that. And then hearing that, you know, my career might be over with this Liz Frank injury. So, yeah, I was definitely dejected. I was definitely down. But I just remember, you know, obviously getting a second opinion and getting the screws put in and going a different route. And that obviously worked out for me. But, you know, you talk about from extremes, going from that moment to, you know, basically, you know, 12 months later playing in the Super Bowl and having those plays that we had. I think when I think of my defining play as far as a Giant or as far as a, you know, on the field, yeah, I think that one comes to mind rather quickly. I mean, I haven't had time to really sit down and look at it, but in the biggest of moments, I think I can't compare to that. It might not be as gratifying as some other plays I've made that, you know, obviously going back and thinking about it, but as far as a team effort and being a part of a team and having a, you know, opportunity to help the team, I think that play definitely is number one.
And Justin, what made the defensive line that you were a part of so unique is there were a lot of personalities and a lot of options, a lot of depth in which the defensive coordinators were able to rotate the personnel. And when you first came in, you had Michael Strahan, you had O.C. Umanyora, and it's interesting because in your 2 years with the Raiders, you seemed to then take on that leadership role where you were able to mentor young players such as Khalil Mack and so forth. When you look back, how much did your first few years with the Giants help shape what your ultimate role with the Raiders became?
Yeah, I think it helped shape, you know, not only just, you know, my 2 years with the Raiders, but, you know, the final six with the Giants, seven with the Giants. You know, when Strahan left, it was kind of looked upon me to kind of, you know, fill their void. Obviously, early in the post-Stray era, I guess, you know, Antonio Pierce was there and guys like that. OC was there. But moving forward, I kind of got, I don't want to say pushed, but encouraged to fill that role. And so, yeah, I think, you know, being around Stray in my early years helped me a lot, not only from hearing what he had to say, but just getting an opportunity to just sit back and watch how he performed, how he prepared. It allowed me to understand that you can't just be a good athlete or a good football player and make it in this league. It's a lot of guys that have done that, was, you know, had those traits and didn't pan out. But you had to do the little things. You had to show up early. You had to eat the right foods. You had to you know, work out after practice, not only before it, but after practice as well. You had to take care of your body, and those things that I guess I took for granted coming into the league, but definitely developed in my few years with, you know, Stray and a lot of other guys for that matter too.
Talking with former Giants defensive lineman Justin Tuck, who recently announced his retirement, helped the Giants win two Super Bowls. Justin, we have a lot of Giants fans that are itching to speak to you personally, so we're going to open up the phone lines, if you don't mind, and hear from members of the Big Blue fan base. How does that sound?
Go ahead.
All right. We've got Kevin on the line. Kevin, what question do you have for Justin Tuck?
Hi, can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear, Kevin.
Hey, Justin, how's it going? I just wanted to, first of all, speaking on behalf of a lot of Giants fans, I want to thank you for everything you did for the organization off and on and off the field. You know, you're a great guy. It's an honor talking to you right now.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted to ask Justin this question. When you decided to leave the Giants for the Raiders, what that decision, was it just, you know, was it money-wise, or did you just want, you know, a change as far as, you know, later on in your career? Like, what was your decision on leaving the Giants and going to the Oakland Raiders?
Well, I think it was threefold. It wasn't necessarily money because I asked the Giants to – basically, I told the Giants I would come back for less than what the Raiders was offering me at the time. So I don't think it was money. I think for me, I kind of loved the direction that the Raiders were headed into. I knew what they were going to do in that draft, or what they wanted to do heading into the draft after talking to McKenzie. Also had great friends in that area, in the San Francisco Bay Area. And plus, I didn't want to play a team that was going to play the Giants. So I love the direction of where the Raiders are going. And obviously, you can see it now with, you know, Khalil Mack and Derek Carr and that team. I think that team's going to be very good next year. But also, I wanted to get away from playing the Giants. I knew I didn't want to play against the Giants. So that all those factors kind of added into it.
And one more question real quick. I mean, obviously, you just retired. Are you looking for a future career in broadcasting? I would love to see you, you know, work for the Giants or ESPN, NFL Network, anything associated with NFL. Have you considered that, or is that too early to even be a factor right now?
No, it's definitely being considered. I am weighing options now. I have had, you know, contact with all the local and national, you know, media outlets, and just trying to figure out if that's something that's best for me and my family. And I am considering it, and it's a possibility.
Kevin, appreciate Absolutely. The phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. On that topic, Justin, we're also fielding questions on Twitter, and you can send them in, #AskTuck. Billy at WM McKinnon asks, any thought of working as a coach later on in your career, Justin?
No.
That was quick.
That was quick.
Yeah.
Sweet it to the point.
Not at all. Not at all.
A lot of long hours involved in that profession.
Yeah, man, it's tough, man. I think you saw from what I said about Coach Coughlin's retirement and his that post I put that, you know, he was sleeping in his offices. So, you know, that's something that I think one of the reasons why I retired is because football makes you an absentee father and makes you an absentee husband, and that's something that I don't want to be no longer. So, right. My time is very important. To me, as far as being able to, you know, catch up on some things that I missed out of because of football and the commitment to football.
Absolutely. Let's try to squeeze in another caller on the line. Steve is on Staten Island. Steve, what question do you have for Justin Tuck?
Hey, good afternoon, Justin. How are you, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
Good, Justin. That last caller kind of stole all my thunder, but I just wanted to tell you thank you. Well, for what you did for this team and the organization, and I got to tell you, as a longtime Giant fan, the one thing that I can definitely say you had when you played that game was intensity. And you know what? You can't teach intensity. You can't school that. You can't train that. That's just natural. And I think you were definitely a natural at your position, brother. And I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of myself and the true Blue Giant fans that recognize the body of work that you put in. And like Paul said to me, you know, that sack of Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, I mean, that's when the wings went up in the air, the beer went flying, and I knew that it was in the bag. So, you know, I just wanted to say thank you, and I hope that I do get a chance to, you know, follow your career more doing something on NFL Network. Or I know you said no to coaching, but you know what? With the intensity that you brought to this team, You know what? It would be nice to see some of these younger players pick up what you have. Thank you very much for taking my call. Good luck, Justin. Thank you, guys.
And Steve, thank you for the phone call.
And just to piggyback what he said, man, I think the real football players realize, because, you know, fans always tell players, thank you, thank you. But, you know, the only reason we have a game is because we have great fans like that. And, you know, the NFL doesn't exist if fans don't, you know, support this or support us. So I'm very thankful for, you know, fans, you know, not only, you know, the Giants, but Raiders as well. And, you know, those are the people that make the game fun for us to go out there and play every day. If we had to go out there and play in front of three people or something like that, you know, I don't think a lot of us would be doing it. But getting an opportunity to play in front of 85,000 screaming fans, man, that I don't know if there's any other thing that can, you know, come close to having that feeling. So I am very thankful for having great fans.
Justin, though, I would think that when you rank, though, all the interactions in life, the pep talks from Paul DeTino in the parking lot have to be at top of everything else, Justin.
It's up there. It's very
okay. We got to put things in perspective on this program here compared to everybody else. Let's try to field another call here. We got another Steven on the line. Steven, welcome aboard. What question do you have for Justin Tuck?
Hello?
Steven, are you there? All right, Steven's lost for words. He got so excited. Let's try Adam in Columbus. Adam, what's happening? What question do you have for Justin Tuck?
Hey, this is a pretty cool start to my day. It's definitely a little better than the typical boring routine. I'm going to start off talking to Justin Tuck, so that's pretty cool. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Justin, thanks for everything you did. My question to you would be this. From your perspective, what is it that the Giants need to do next? What moves would you make if you put your GM hat on with respect to JPP, free agency, the draft, developing in-house guys, maybe a little of each of those things? What do we need to do? What happens next to get this pass rush back? And what happens next to get this defense back to championship form?
Well, in respect to that question, I am no GM. But what I think is truly lacking. We had some great teams, don't get me wrong, but a lot of our teams wasn't based off talent. It was based off heart. It was based off camaraderie with each other. It was based off not really caring who got the touchdown or the sack or whatever. And a lot of that came from leadership, and that's something that I've seen lacking. And, you know, that's part of, you know, my 9 years there, everything was based off leadership. Coach Coughlin didn't have to be the leader of our football team. He didn't have to say we need to pick it up here and there. We had guys on that sideline that made guys better. And that's something I see lacking from the Giants. So, you know, you can go out and get the greatest of talent from the draft and free agency. But if that camaraderie is not there, that cohesiveness, togetherness, is not there, then that team is not going to play as a team. It's going to play as a bunch of individuals. And that's when you find guys or you find teams that are successful, when you got 11 guys playing as one. So I don't know how they incorporate that in, you know, Jerry making the decisions here coming up soon, but somehow or another they need to find 11 guys that love playing for each other and not worrying about their contract or, you know, whatever else.
Justin, let me ask you one thing, piggybacking off of that, to steal a phrase from you a moment ago. You talk about the chemistry and the camaraderie in the locker room. To so many fans out there, they don't really understand where the all-in came from during your Super Bowl run. And I know you were such a big part of that. I know the story, but a lot of people out there, the fans, have not gotten that straight. Would you kindly give them a thumbnail capsule of how all-in got started and how you guys rode that to a Lombardi Trophy?
Well, the short version is we were in chapel service one night, and one of our guys came in and gave us poker chips and said and wrote all in on it. And it was, you know, we were basing it from a religious standpoint. We were basing it from all in for Christ. And, you know, I asked him, did he mind if we kind of picked it up as a slogan for our team? And being all in just means that you were prepared to give everything you had for the guy next to you. And it was, I mean, at the time, it was simple. I mean, all in, it doesn't take a rocket science to, you know, scientist to come up with something like that. But it was something that every guy bought into. I still have my poker chip. from that Super Bowl run. I know a lot of guys still have their poker chips from that run. And it was just, it was part of all of us saying, you know what, no matter what happens, we're going to have each other's back. And, yeah, it really brought that football team together.
Great stuff.
Well, Justin, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight, and thanks so much for fielding the questions from fans. I know they're appreciative both on the line and on Twitter. We wish you the best of luck moving forward with your retirement, and certainly feel free to stop by the facility whenever you'd like.
Yeah, you can't be a stranger, Justin. You got to stop in on us now. Come on.
I'll be there soon. And I know one question we didn't get answered that I've seen a lot of Giants fans tweet me is am I going to do a one-day contract with the Giants? And the question and the answer to that is yes. We can't do it yet because the league season doesn't open until March, the second week of March, I guess. So
right.
For all the Giants fans out there asking, am I going to retire Giant? Absolutely, I am. Look forward to seeing you guys soon.
Well, that's great stuff. And, Justin, for all the fans who said thank you for what you did as a Giant, I want to say thank you for being a pro's pro and a man's man. You're a hell of a guy, and you've been a great credit to the NFL, never mind what you did for the Giants or for the Raiders. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You got it. Appreciate the time. Justin Tuck, former Giants defensive lineman, two-time Super Bowl champion, weighing in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And you heard it right out of his mouth saying that he does want to retire as a Giant, but right now it's the logistics of the calendar for the National Football League.
You know, I think that fans need to understand that when great players like that come along and great Super Bowl teams come along like they do, you can't take that stuff for granted. Because you just never know if you're going to get back. I remember Howard Cross talking about the 1990 team that beat the Bills with Scott Norwood wide right and him telling everybody, gee, I thought this was going to be a regular occurrence. And then, of course, look how long it took for the Giants to get back, the 2000 season before they got back. Heck, some guys never get to play in it. Some guys get to go once and then never get to go again, and they realize, oh, my goodness, what happened? You know, I forgot about it, or I didn't treat it right. I think that's what I really loved about Justin's two Super Bowl teams, is that Michael Strahan and Amani Toomer took all the guys under their wing when they went to the Super Bowl in 2007 and said, we'd been here in 2000, and we didn't treat it properly. We didn't really understand it. We didn't recognize it as well as we could have. We let it overwhelm us. And those two guys, more than anybody else, got that locker room together and said, no, appreciate this, soak it in, live for the moment. You may never get here again. We're lucky to be here a second time. And I think that helped all those guys in the 2007 team focus. And they went out there and they beat the undefeated Patriots in a historic victory. And, of course, then you had most of those guys come back in 2011. And even the new guys then got all the words from the 2007 guys with the immediacy and the urgency that the Super Bowl requires. And I thought that those two teams were much better prepared than the 2000 team was that lost to the Ravens.
There's a great scene before the Giants and the Patriots play in that 2011 Super Bowl, Paul, where Tuck is in the huddle with the defense.
Yeah.
And he goes around and he says, you know, you don't have a Super Bowl ring. You don't have a Super Bowl ring. This
exactly.
guy's got a Super Bowl ring. Make sure you get a taste and remember the feeling here because it doesn't come very often. That was the one thing that came to mind when you were reminiscing and going over that.
He became the Strahan
yeah.
for that team in terms of the beacon of light that was going to show these guys the way. This is what it takes to be a champion. Don't let it slip through your fingers.
Well, and that's what had been in place if you go back the last few years when the Giants were making Super Bowl runs. Based on how the roster was put together, Paul, you had sort of a mentorship program where you had one guy groom the next guy to come in and not just deliver from an X's and O's standpoint,
right.
but I'm talking about the leadership entity too. That Tuck took over as that voice once Strahan, once OC finally left. Then obviously Beeson came in. But that's important to keep that locker mm-hmm. room together, just as much as it is to be that leader on the field, whether you're the middle linebacker like Antonio Pierce or you're that strong presence on the defensive line.
No question. And all those leaders, the guys who were all part of Tom Coughlin's leadership council, are all equally responsible in their own way for showing this team what it took to win that 2007 Super Bowl, that second championship of the Coughlin era.
We're going to open up the phone lines for the remainder of the program. If you want to obviously look back at Justin Tuck's career, you want to weigh in on all Giants topics. Just to review, in case you're just joining us, the Giants have announced that Martin Mayhew, the former Lions general manager, is going to be joining the Giants front office. He'll be the director of football operations / special projects. And also yesterday, it was announced officially that the Giants released Will Beatty and Jeff Schwartz, and John Beeson is hanging up the jersey. 201-939-4513, # Giants chat. Let's go to John in Jacksonville. John, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hi, I'm just speaker for the whole Shakedown crew. I just want to tell you that if Justin's listening, I think he belongs in the Ring of Honor. And go Big Blue. That's all I got to say. And go Shakes. And Charlie and Maine, I love you.
Hey, John. Good stuff. And we don't make those decisions. Those decisions about the Ring of Honor come from a much higher pay scale than ours. But I think it's probably safe to say he would be strongly considered.
Yes, I think that you're not going out on a limb with that statement there, Paul. 201-939-4513. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Maurice is in New Jersey. Maurice, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hi.
Good afternoon to you, Maurice. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was just listening to Justin when he was on, and one thing he did touch on that he mentioned was the cohesiveness with the team. I played for a great high school program, Montclair High School. We went to 5 straight championships, and we won 3. And I was a part of a championship team. And when you win a championship, it does something to those group of guys, and you create a bond with those guys. And it's just something special about winning a championship. And my question is, Paul, did you see anything from this team this year that maybe was lacking that you did not see from the 2017? I guess my question is, what I'm saying is just that leadership and that strong cohesiveness amongst the guys, because we were in games where we just didn't pull them out. Like, what, you've been around a lot of Giants football. What is the thing that you think that locker room, I doubt it was leadership. Was it just pure talent that we were lacking that caused us to lose these games? What was the fine line, in your opinion? I'll take it off the air.
There were a lot of reasons, circumstances, injuries, talent, depth, a lot of reasons why the Giants finished where they did this year, not making the playoffs. But if you're asking me to compare the chemistry and the leadership skills of what we saw in 2007 and 2011 compared to this year's team, what I will tell you is this. I'm seeing a semblance of that chemistry being created with these young offensive linemen. Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg, hopefully Eric Flowers, who was only a rookie this year, will start to grow into that type of role in year two, and if not in year two, certainly in year three. I do think that's where it's going to come from. That's going to be the seed in that Giants locker room that grows the plant of chemistry and leadership and of what we now know as Giants football. I think that's where it's coming from. I see the semblance of it in that locker room now coming from those guys. It's going to take some cultivating. It's still going to have to grow. Remember, these guys are young guys. Richburg's only here a couple of years. Pugh here a little bit longer, but you know, it may take another year. I can't tell you that because it's a naturally evolving process. But I see that part of this team is starting to sprout those kinds of characteristics.
Well, what the Giants have done in each of the last few years is invest in an offensive lineman specifically, a young offensive lineman. So, you know, similar to what we've seen other teams in the division do, like the Dallas Cowboys, for example,
yeah.
Paul, you know, when you spend every year a selection on an offensive lineman, you're slowly throwing in another guy into the mix. Sometimes it takes a year or two till that semblance builds. And I think when you look at the left side of this offensive line right now, the young nucleus of this Giants offensive line is on the left side. Now the question is, can the right side get to the level of where the left side is so that you can get back to, remember, the period in which this Giants offensive line flourished, and it was a huge staple of this team, is, you know, when we had our colleague David Deal, and we had the Sean O'Haras and the Kareem McKenzies. And what did we talk about a few days ago on the show, Paul? It wasn't so much their level of productivity. It was the fact that they were on the field every single game together. So that continuity built little by little.
Made a huge difference. I will tell you one guy who's a little bit older, but I think could be a part of that growing chemistry on the defensive side of the ball would be Robert Ayers. I think he's got that in him. I see it. And I know he wants to be back with the Giants. I hope they can make the business work. And I still believe that despite a little bit more of an advanced age, I think he's a guy who could start growing some of that seed on the defensive side. I really do. And I hope that they can surround him with some more good players and make that happen for him.
Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for spending part of your Thursday with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Richard is in New York. Richard, what's happening?
Hi, Paul. Hi, Lance.
Hi.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Great.
How's
How are you?
Yeah. I'm doing wonderful. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Good stuff.
Thanks so much.
I've been listening for the past couple of days, and I have two questions. One that's pretty much been overlooked. We've been talking about the defense quite a bit often. We know that Prince is a free agent this year, and I was just wondering, if we do not re-sign him, do we pick up somebody in the draft? Is there anybody good enough in the draft that we can possibly get first or second round, or are there any good free agents that you guys have your eyes on? I feel like that's the part we haven't been focusing on our defense as much. We've been talking about linebackers, safeties, and our front seven. And my second question is, with the retirement of John Beeson, you guys have been talking all season long about his leadership and how much of a coach that he could possibly be. Do you think the Giants will bring him back as a possible linebacker coach? And thank you for taking my question. I'll take it off the air.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for the phone call.
Which one do you want?
You start with how about Justin Tuck and coaching? That was the last part of his question.
Well, he's Beeson and coaching
Beeson,
is what he was asking about. No, John Beeson, I think, has got a career in broadcasting if he wants it, and I do think there's some interest on his part. And no, I don't see him getting into NFL coaching. I think it requires much too much time that he's willing to give up. You know, he's a guy who's got a lot of interests, and I think that would bog him down. However, I do think he would be willing to be back during the course of summer camp if they wanted him as a summer intern. I think he would do some of that. And I think at some point in time, he may go back to even Miami. I mean, maybe he'd be great in college and do something with them, or even at the high school level. Richie Seibert has done some youth college football, football coaching. I could see that. I don't see John Beeson being a part of an NFL coaching staff full-time because I don't think he wants to put in the time for it.
I think Beeson's got a great track record of working with a number of young linebackers, both here as well as going back to Carolina. Remember, you know, he was considered a veteran within that crew.
Yes.
That had the Thomas Davises. Chase Blackburn was there a little bit, who we had on the program last week. So, you know, him working with maybe that college age group, I would agree. I think that may be an ideal fit for him, or even the high school level or something like that, to really understand the ins and outs of football. The other part of the question that Richard was asking, in the event of what happens with free agency based on the corner position
for
the Giants, you know, who maybe is on the market that would be attractive, that would be a good fit, and so forth. I mean, I brought up the list of potential free agent corners, and there's a number of people. And as you've mentioned the last few days, we don't know if more are going to join the mix based on some of the transactions that take place with the teams and so forth. One intriguing name I'll throw out there, and this is just my speculation, it's nothing hardcore evidence-wise, Sean Smith of the Kansas City Chiefs, who was also with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
He's a tall corner in which he's been able to produce matchup-wise. I think he's got some versatility. That would be a name to watch to see how the market plays out, because Kansas City's got a lot of free agents. It's not just the corner. It's Eric Berry.
Sure.
They've got some linebackers. So, you know, you wonder who can they keep, who will they have to lose. That would be one name I would throw out there to watch out for, at least.
I think he will also command a pretty high price tag as well. And again, there are still only so many resources available. I would say this, from what I understand and from what I've seen during the All-Star games in college, there are going to be a lot of DBs coming out in the draft, and you're going to be able to get your hands on plenty of them in the first three rounds. Now, the question also becomes then, do you draft a guy in the top three rounds as a defensive back and immediately throw him into the fire and say, guess what, we need you to get on the field right away? Because when you do that, as we saw with Landon Collins this year, there will be a number of rookie mistakes that you will have to live with.
And keep this in mind. You know, everybody focuses on Prince, Paul. The Giants have a few other free agents that play the corner position, too. So you can't just think about who your starters are going to be. You also need to look at it from the perspective of depth. Tremaine McBride, for example, he's a free agent.
They'll need bodies.
And he's provided some depth.
Yeah, you just can't worry about the starters because, let's face it, you need at least four good corners in this league.
Andre is in Rochester. He joins us on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Andre, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, Andre. What do you have for us?
I just wanted to piggyback on the continuity thing. And as we've seen, Robert Harris and JPP are on the free agent market. And that's kind of like we're missing everybody off NASCAR package. If they leave, you have nobody that's really from the championship team. And especially if Prince leaves, there's nobody left off that championship team. So my question is, what is the percentage of us retaining Robert Ayers and JPP on that line?
Well, I think a lot has to do with the market and so forth. I mean, we mentioned and GM Jerry Reese said after the season that the Giants feel they're in a very good position financially in terms of their own free agents as well as who's out there on the market. Robert Ayers, keep in mind, is coming off a career year. And when players come off career years, normally that obviously throws their name into the mix and teams are going to take notice. So it'll be very interesting to see what level of interest he gets outside of the Giants. I mean, certainly the Giants were aware of his production. And with respect to JPP, I think the same thing could be said. You know, JPP, if there's any team that knows him well, Paul, and we've had these discussions, it's the Giants compared to any other franchise, especially when you take into consideration his production, what happens behind the scenes, and also in the wake of his injury.
In every instance, when you're talking about a free agent, the team that currently has the guy will know infinitely more about that player than anybody else on the outside will. That's just inherent in what happens because he's here every day. But I also believe in this particular instance, given the medical situation of JPP and the fact that he's had another procedure on his hand, I do believe that the Giants, even more so, are in a position where they have not just an infinite amount more of information, but an infinite, infinite amount more of information. Because you're talking about a special situation with certain circumstances here that, you know, are certainly very unique. And I just think that JPP probably holds more value to the Giants, and they know better about that value than anybody else out there in the NFL. For that reason, I suspect they're going to be able to find a meeting of the minds, and he will be back with his team.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Let's continue to field some more of your calls as we move till the top of the hour. Andrew is in New Jersey. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? I really support Jerry Reese, and you probably remember, Paul, when they had a Luke Pettigrew and the linebacker that was from the Redskins, LeVar Arrington, and a couple other often injured and older players, and they released them, and it seemed controversial, but he replaced them with, you know, younger players, David Deal, and other good players came in. So I think this year people were down on Jerry Reese, but no one knew JPP was going to get injured, and it was a fluke injury. So you thought, okay, you're going to have one of the best pass rushers in the NFL just enter in his prime. And
How do you think he felt? He took the job here to be Giants defensive coordinator. He leaves Baltimore to take this job, and he thinks he's got a 15-sack guy in the bag. And then all of a sudden, a couple of months after he takes the job, he finds out that he may not have that. How do you think he felt?
Not a text message he was happy to see or a phone call when he got that call. But and he's a great defensive coordinator. And then DeMontre Moore, you think, okay, well, he's like a great special teams and situational pass rusher. He gets kicked off, and Robert Ayers is great, but he is often injured, so you never really had all three of them. But so I give Jay, you know, I know that when I talk about Reese, if, you know, so Reese shouldn't get all that criticism. And what you guys have to promise not to laugh, but
I don't know about that. But anyway,
I'm going to say, of course, we have to focus on defense and pass rush, but with all the room that they have under the cap and drafting a defensive end, a pass rusher, you think that they could sign Calvin Johnson and keep Victor Cruz on the team. And would there be a conflict if you had two great receivers?
Well,
and I'll listen off air.
All right, Andrew, appreciate the phone call. I mean, the first thing, and it's not official, but based on the speculation, Calvin Johnson says he's going to retire. So, I mean, the last time I checked, he doesn't want to continue to play.
That's the first things first. We always tell you, the player's got to want to come as well, and if he's retiring, there's no point in even having a conversation.
I think that pretty much explains
it.
I don't know if there's really anything else more to add to that, but leave it to Andrew to spice things up on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Ed is in Maryland. Let's see what Ed brings to the table. Ed, what do we
got? Hello, Ed.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Great.
Had a question about the release yesterday of Will Beatty because during last season when he was on IR, it was a thought that he was coming back and everybody thought he was coming back. And
then
when he was getting ready to come back, he had an injury to his shoulder. And I was just reading stuff online, and I was hearing there was a little bit of a squabble as to Beatty not wanting to play left tackle, and the team, I'm not sure if it's Coughlin or the team, wanted to play right tackle, and he had a decision to make, to either choose to get the surgery or to play right tackle. I don't know if that's true, but I called about that before. I didn't get an answer to that. And I'm just kind of thinking because just the season before, he was a top 10 left tackle, and I know his salary was kind of high, but it wasn't like it was crazy high. And we had a cap room to pay him. And being that we have a hole on the line as it is, you know, I just thought it probably would have made sense to bring him back and maybe even at left tackle and move Flowers to the right tackle. You know, that way Flowers could get some more room until next year.
There's a couple things you have to keep in mind, Ed. First of all, in terms of the injury situation, he had the torn pec in March. And then he was rehabbing that. And then a few weeks before he was able to be activated, the rotator cuff started to act up. And the Giants, with their medical staff and their coaching staff, basically told him, listen, let's see how we can get that taken care of. And if you can rehab to a level where you believe and we believe that you can get out there consistently and not be a liability, because the last thing the world wanted to do was to activate Beatty and then have him in and out of the lineup. That doesn't help anybody. So what happened was, and yes, the plan was going to be he was going to be the right tackle. But when it finally push came to shove and the time clock expired and they had to make the decision, nobody could get on the same page in terms of confidence that he was going to be able to get out there and fulfill the consistency obligation. And therefore, the decision was made, rather than have him in and out of the lineup all the time, just keep him on IR. And that's the end of it. So that, I think, answers part of your question. The other part of your question is, in terms of long-term with Will Beatty, well, this is a guy who'd been in the league for half a dozen years and had suffered a number of injuries over his career. This was not the first injury.
Correct.
This was not even the second injury. He's had a number of them. And as we all know, as you get older and you play more in the NFL, those injuries have a cumulative effect. And so the Will Beatty that you saw a couple of years ago that played a solid left tackle, and I quite frankly thought he was the comeback player of the year that year after he came back from the broken leg, he was really good. And he got his contract extension, and that's great because he earned it. But that player, I think you could make an argument based on all the medical evidence and all the things he's been through the last couple of years, that player may not exist anymore. That Will Beatty may not ever come back on the field no matter where he plays this season. So you must keep that in mind when you project as to whether or not the guy still belongs on your team.
The decision is not just based on what happened in 2015. It's also what happened over the span of his career. And you know, I was doing some math yesterday. Beatty was eligible to play in 112 games.
Okay.
This is just the regular season going back to 2009.
Okay.
Until 2015. Of the 112, he suited up for 82. So that means he was not in uniform for 30 games during the course of his Giants tenure.
That's not a great number.
Right. True. But can you tell me what his cap hit was? Because I was hearing he had about 2 or 3 years left on his deal, and it probably would have made more sense to actually keep him as opposed to taking a big cap hit. And
I don't know how much we save
off his cut.
Well, I'll tell you what. You won't know that unless you know for sure if he's a June 1st cap cut or if he's a today cap cut. And I didn't see anywhere if it was identified just from a business perspective what type of cut he was. I will try to find that out at some point in time. But at this point, I just know he was cut. And that makes a big difference in terms of how you calculate his number.
Right, right. And two more things I want to mention on. I see teams like Philly re-signing their guys like Zach Ertz and other guys they have way early before free agency starts. Why hasn't Reeves, even throughout his whole team, he's never re-signed guys early? Guys like Prince, JPP, that are guys that are thought to be coming back. I mean, I would think he would like to be on the phone in the early just to see what type of deal they're looking for, then try to sign him early and not try to sign everybody at the last second. And I don't know, you know, why Reese has never done that, but I think that'll help because we have so many holes and, you know, not try to sign everybody on the day before free agency starts.
Ed, I think the explanation for that, we're going to let you go. I think we want to try to sneak in maybe one more guy. But here's the answer to that question. Sometimes, because of the way your salary cap is and how tight you are up against it and because of the way that the contracts lie, sometimes you don't really have the ability to sign guys early. You'd like to be able to do that. For example, the Giants were able to sign Eli Manning early. You know, they didn't let him explore free agency. They signed him before the start of this season with one season left on his deal. They were able to do that. You can't always do that. And that's why it's so critically important to have a salary cap expert in your team or in your organization, because what they try to do is layer the contracts in such a way that the critical ones don't come up due all at the same time, and that you don't get jammed up in a certain year where, we're going to have three superstars up for a deal this year, and we only have $1.5 million of salary cap room. That's a bad mix, because now you know you're going to lose guys.
Like Denver Broncos, for example. They have a lot of guys all at once who have expiring contracts. The other thing to know, Paul, is, you know, remember, when it comes to an extension, just like free agency, the player has to want to sign the extension.
Too.
The player
Absolutely.
And the agent may come from it, hey, you know, we're going to take our chances, we'll risk injury, but we want to see what we can produce on the field in the final year of our deal, and then maybe our market value will skyrocket. And there's always a catch-22. For example, you know, JPP with what happened with his injury,
yep.
And then Prince with some of his injuries.
Hey,
it's a catch-22.
Wide receiver Steve Smith, a Pro Bowl guy who had over 100 catches. The Giants had offered him a very sweet deal. He said, no, I'm going to play out my deal because I'd like to get an even better one. And
example.
What happened? He blew out his knee.
Yeah, exactly. And he never recovered fully from
no.
that injury as a result. So I think you got to be careful when you see other teams do that and say, well, we have to follow that blueprint. Zach Ertz and Brent Celek, who the caller was alluding to, the two Eagles tight ends that were locked up. I mean, Ertz is still very young in his career. You know, and Celek, those two guys in particular, they rotate so many of their tight ends. They don't play nearly as many downs as perhaps some of the other players that the Giants would have been looking to make an extension. So I think that's also something that you have to look at when you compare the makeup of the roster for the Giants versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, that is going to wrap things up for us here on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We certainly want to thank Justin Tuck for taking the time out to reminisce about his Giants career, as well as taking calls from the fans, as well as those that asked a question on Twitter. And Justin Tuck did mention at the end of the interview that he does plan to retire as a Giant through a one-day contract, but league rules, the NFL calendar has to allow for that, and that means the earliest we're looking at is probably March in terms of the logistics. So that's certainly a positive to hear. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern here on Giants.com as we'll continue to cover all the latest surrounding the team. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.